because we need more available energy at lower costs.
So we want to keep our standards, our environmental and also social standards.
We feel in EPP that we can be closer and closer to each other on the basis of rule of solidarity. It will be the best solution for all the member states.
Voices from the largest political group in the European Parliament on the need for green, renewable and affordable energy that Europe needs to slash its emissions and meet its climate goals. Throw in a wild card, the Russian invasion of Ukraine, triggering the EU's embargo on Russian oil and gas and higher prices on energy and critical raw materials. So how do we stay on track to fight climate change and make a green and fair transition for European consumers, industries and businesses? Find out in this episode of the EPP Group's special podcast series, A Europe That Protects You. The price of gas in Europe after Russia's aggression in Ukraine was over 300 euros per megawatt hour. This was 10 times more than the multiple yearly average before the war. Without government support, many European families wouldn't have been able to afford heating their homes in winter. It was a huge crisis for Europe and a clear sign that something needs to change. The gas crisis has highlighted Europe's weakness in this area, and there are more vulnerabilities Europe needs to tackle on energy security, as well as access to critical raw materials.
There's a lot of industries which is under pressure by the prices, the steel industry, cement industry. So everyone who uses gas or carbon in their combustion process have now to change. There's a lot of investment. The energy prices make the products rise.
That's Christian Eller, the EPP Group's spokesman on industry research and energy. He says Europe needs secure and affordable energy to maintain industrial competitiveness, while making the green transition to keep manufacturing in the EU.
You can see the complexity with the net zero technologies. So for example, we need to produce solar panels, we need carbon silicates. That's produced by one company. So the energy prices are going so high that they are stopping to produce polysilicates, which is the basis for PV panels, which leads now to the fact that, for example, one of the remaining producers of PV panels, Meyer Burger, is now going to the US because they simply can't afford the raw materials.
I think we are making progress which was deemed unrealistic 5-10 years ago.
That's Dimitar Lilkov, a senior research officer at the Wilfrid Martin Center think tank. He focuses on energy and the environment. He's also a former advisor in the European Parliament.
First, let's give the EU some credit where credit is due, right? Compared to late 2022, we are in a way better situation when it comes to energy price, when it comes to natural gas supply and storage, for example. More than 90% of storage is full. It's still a precarious situation. Why? Because we do not have energy security and there's lots and lots of vulnerability when it comes to price, specifically for consumers. We are faced with double the energy prices compared with the averages in the last decade. Our European citizens are still exposed to energy poverty in some member states, and they are exposed to the volatility in the markets.
The European Union has helped consumers and businesses deal with those higher energy bills.
The EU subsidized a lot, and it subsidized industry and households. And we spend more than 600 billion of euros commissioned for industry and households to cushion the energy price shock, which was very, very important for consumers. But long term, this is not a sustainable policy. So we need to focus more on energy security. We need to focus more on diversification of energy supply. We need to also make sure that we have long-term, LNG deals with different providers, be it the Americans, be it Qatar, be it Australia, so that we can have a more predictable price in the future.
Diversification is the name of the game, in renewables as well as cleaner fuels like gas. The EPP Group was the first to propose increasing the share of renewable energy as a reaction to the Russian full-scale invasion of Ukraine that began in February 2022. 3 months later, the EU adopted a plan called Repower EU to rapidly reduce dependence on Russian fossil fuels and fast-forward the green transition. Here's Jerzy Buzek, an EPP group member of the European Parliament, who negotiated the EU's hydrogen and gas package as part of the EU's quest towards energy union and energy security.
On the last report on the state of energy union, we know that we change absolutely the amount of import from Russia, 4 times less today than 2 years ago. Incredible result. But certainly we should go further, not to stop in this place. And gas hydrogen package could help us in this path.
A real energy union will take time. And Buzek says hydrogen infrastructure needs to be a key part of the green energy transition.
Hydrogen gas package gives us 3 crucial possibilities to replace Russian gas. First possibility, that giving legal solution for each member state to stop completely import of natural gas from Russia. And it is a far-reaching solution, the most far-reaching solution in our legislative proposal in the whole European Union. Secondly, joint purchasing of natural gas in the EU. So it's a big competition for the Russian gas. And replacement is possible for cheaper costs of natural gas from all over the world, except of Russia. And third issue, which is very important, we've got legal, complete framework for more and more production of biomethane and green hydrogen.
According to the EPP group's Maria Cavallo, the EU is also fighting market manipulation in the wholesale energy market that's been driving up prices, especially since the war in Ukraine. She is also a professor in energy and climate change.
The Russians for sure, but there was not enough transparency that we could act and protect ourselves against this manipulation. So one of the objectives is to have transparency, to have the data, and to have the powers to act also at European level, like we have now.
And how is her native Portugal tackling its energy issues? The EU27 have agreed to the Fit for 55 target of slashing emissions by 55% by 2030, backed by the Renewable Energies Directive and the Repower EU plan. The EPP group backs raising renewables to 42.5% of energy use by 2030.
Portugal has done well in renewables. We just had the figures of 23, and we have 61% of the production of electricity is from renewables origin. It's quite good. It's a high percentage of hydro, but also the wind and the photovoltaic has increased. We also use biomass. But in general, we have a lot of work to do on energy efficiency in buildings. That is also a file that we are discussing at the moment.
That's how the EPP group is helping consumers make the energy transition, in contrast to the populist outcry without solutions.
As an EPP, we have put together and we have managed to negotiate a strong regulation directive that protects the consumers from now on when it enters in force, that we hope in the end of 24. So instead of complaining and shouting, we have done our homework. We have prepared a very good proposal that puts the consumer at the center, protects the consumer and protects them against crisis that may happen in the future.
From Portugal, we now move to northeastern Europe. Andreas Kubilius, former Prime Minister of Lithuania, notes it's been hard for his region to cut deep and long-standing energy ties with Russia. But they've done it and are pushing ahead.
It's a game changer for the whole Europe, not only for Central and Eastern Europe, because in Central Europe, for example, some countries like Lithuania or Poland, we were very much worried about our dependency on Russian gas much earlier. And that's why, for example, in Lithuania, we started to build our LNG terminal in 2010. We concluded it and finished in 2014. Because we had the only one gas pipeline coming from Russia, and we were 100% dependent on Gazprom gas supplies. And we understood that that this is very big danger for our geopolitical security. It was not easy. We were the first country to, to push out gas from this monopoly. But when this crisis came, we were much more safe.
No longer all the eggs in one basket. And there's more to do to develop other sources from around the world.
We need to have diversification of supply from where we're getting energy resources, which still we're using, like gas, like oil. So we were too much dependent on Russian supplies. Now we switch to what we can call to global markets. I mean, we're buying LNG in the global markets.
And make it a part of the green transition. Moving away from fossil fuels to meet the EU's climate commitments to slash emissions by 55% by 2030 and to reach climate neutrality by mid-century.
Should we stay dependent on gas? Should we stay dependent on oil? And that is definitely, there is other issues like climate change, and that is why we need to move, you know, and that is again helping us to be not so much dependent on some specific energy resources like oil and gas. It's, of course, moving towards, you know, implementation of Green Deal and towards renewable resources, wind power, solar power.
This is why the EPP Group helped negotiate the European Parliament's position on promoting energy from renewable sources. Christianella looks ahead to what's needed in the next legislative term.
Renewables are really available everywhere. That's a matter of grid. I mean, we need more infrastructure in Europe. It's a matter of prices. I mean, we really have to shut down subsidies. We really have to get this industry started because the prices with the relatively limited amount produced right now are too high. So I think it's all on implementation, on infrastructure, on the organization of grid, on storage. I think that's the key issue for the next term, that we need much more storage because we might produce renewables at times where the industry or consumers are not consuming. So storage will be key, and that is big investments, and there is a need for a regulatory framework for that.
The future energy mix also needs hydrogen, especially for energy-intensive sectors.
No hydrogen, no greening. I mean, in all combustion processes, in all industries, the only way to reduce CO2 is simply to use hydrogen instead of carbon. That's a way really to drop the CO2 emissions by almost 80%. But it is something we are desperately going to need. We need much, much more hydrogen to achieve our climate ambitions.
Energy is only one piece of this jigsaw puzzle. The European Union's goal of achieving climate neutrality by 2050 and ensuring a successful green and digital transition relies heavily on securing access to critical raw materials. Like all the lithium, nickel and copper we'll need for electric vehicles to replace most of the 250 million gasoline and diesel vehicles on the road in the EU. Most of those materials are imported.
For example, an electric vehicle needs much more critical raw materials than a conventional car, up to 6 times more critical raw materials.
That's Hildegard Benteler, MEP, who is the EPP Group's lead negotiator for the Critical Raw Materials Act. Today, we only mine a tiny fraction of what we consume. For instance, we import 78% of lithium from Chile. We will need up to 18 times more lithium by 2030 and almost 60 times more in 2050 compared to today regarding rare earth elements.
We have to look after our mining industry because it was in tatters, sometimes in some countries even abolished. But we need a thriving mining industry to reach our goals. And we have set a goal of only modest 10%. So you see the relation with the imports. But we want to make sure that in case of a supply disruption, that we are able to rely on our own resources. We have resources of lithium and we have very innovative projects. For example, in Germany, we do it with geothermal energy while extracting lithium. We can also provide the neighboring villages with heat. So this is a very good example how we can make a win-win situation.
So how do we get access to the rest of those critical raw materials? Researcher Dimitar Lilkov says it needs a range of actions inside and outside the EU.
the Critical Raw Materials Act, which has wide support from different political parties and member states, and was a success for the EPP, for the EU. In terms of goals, I think these are great goals. 10% of the minerals mined in the EU, 40% processed in the EU. However, these goals are still aspirational. And we've got a long way to go before we have the necessary legal regulatory framework in the member states and also the financial incentives for businesses when it comes to these goals. And to be honest, the goals are quite ambitious, and we will need to see more mining capacity and more mining engagement in the European member states themselves, something which is costly, something which takes a lot of time, but we definitely need to mine more in Europe.
That's why the EU needs strategic mapping of where and how to get the critical raw materials, either at home or abroad. Poland has copper, Spain has strontium, Sweden has cobalt, Finland has nickel. So how to speed that up?
We want to burn the red tape, and this is why we had to set a very new framework for member states, because they are in charge of permits. And we managed really for strategic projects, really foreseeable deadlines, a one-stop agency, a single point of contact, so that companies, project developers have a clear idea whom they have to address, and they have a clear timetable, because this was a big hurdle until now, that investors didn't know how long it would take until the project would run and finally produce also minerals, because this could last up to 8 to 10 to 12 years.
Strategic mapping also needs to include recycling, expanding on Europe's circular economy, and finding alternatives, like for smartphones, which rely on over 50 raw materials, including lithium, cobalt, and nickel for batteries, gallium and silicon for chips, and indium for touchscreens.
We need to start the circle. We need to bring back these batteries after 6-7 years once they run out. We need to bring them back into the circle, either as a battery for cars or as battery for storage. We want to have 25% of recycled critical raw materials in certain products so that industry knows that they have a clear direction where to go. We also want to put a focus of our research in the EU to substitute critical raw materials, because there are many developments, for example, with regard to batteries.
But what if we don't find enough affordable energy and raw materials for our industries in Europe? Dimitar Lilkov of the Martin Center says they may go elsewhere with more attractive investment conditions.
I've been meeting small and big business liaisons and representatives from startups to big companies last couple of months, and they all say the same thing. We are getting direct pitches. We're getting direct offers from the Americans saying, hey, here's some tax credits. Here's cheaper land, cheaper electricity costs. Just come over to the US or even to China. The Chinese are even sending shopping lists to companies and saying, take your pick, I'll reallocate your business here. We're going to make it happen. And I do not want to see this happening in Europe. I want to keep those businesses here. And I hope that the EPP, the EU, is having this in mind, and we will take the necessary policy steps so we can keep these businesses in Europe.
Further policy steps to ensure energy security for Europeans, their homes and their businesses, with EPP leadership on the EU level, says Jerzy Buzek.
So we are much, much more secure than a few years ago. We should underline that. And it was mostly such a big project thanks to European Union money. And in the future, it will be also hydrogen backbone.
The hydrogen backbone is a key component of energy security in a true European energy union, producing more domestic energy and critical raw materials, investing in the cross-border energy grid, and pursuing a diversified import strategy. This is all part of the EPP Group's quest for energy security at affordable prices for consumers and businesses. So that's all for this episode of this special EPP Group podcast series on A Europe That Protects You. Subscribe to our podcast and make sure to join us next week as we dive into other burning topics. For more information, follow us online via @EPP Group and check out eppgroup.eu.